I know I should run before you break my heart. Walk away from the very start. I wanna believe you're the one in your arms. Girl, I know I should run. I know I should run. I've got this feeling I can't ignore. It speaks so clear. I've heard it before. I'm wanting you. You say you're wanting me. Do I dare believe this is meant to be? I know I should run before you break my heart. Walk away from the very start. I wanna believe you're the one in your arms. Girl, I know I should run. I know I should run. When I'm with you, I'm so mesmerized. It's a spell, you've got me hypnotized. I can't turn away, can't even see the door. If I should leave, I'd only want you more. I know I should run before you break my heart. Walk away from the very start. I wanna believe you're the one in your arms. Girl, I know I should run. Tell me to stay.
This is J.D. Doyle, and welcome to part two of Queer Music Heritage for February. And I started it off with another track by Sugar Beach, whose interview I feature in part one. This second segment will give me a chance to share more of their music and also more of my interview with Phil Putnam. And I'll slip in some other folks as well, including an interview with an artist I've followed for years named Scott Friedman. The Sugar Beach song was another from their latest album, Not Deserted, and it was called I Know I Should Run. And I'm very glad I can share with you this very sexy song by them, called Give Me Your Body.
Oh, you sweet thing. You're making me crazy. Not sure you know where this is leading. You lay on this blanket, staring at the stars, laughing at my jokes, bold and leading. So afraid to touch you. God, I feel so weak. If I kiss you now, but I ruin everything. Give me your body and I'll handle it again. Give me your desire and I will take you there. Give me your fire, I will keep it burning. Give me your love, there will be no returning. Won't ignore that you're scared. These are uncharted waters for you. This night's been so perfect. Where else can we go? But closer and deeper and through. I can't wait any longer. I'm twisting up inside. Where conscience and passion collide.
Again, that was the duo Sugar Beach. When I interviewed Phil, we talked for about an hour, and he's one of those people who, though you've never met in person, you just feel like you know them. So I ended up with more material than I could use in the main interview. I am really glad that having my own site gives me the opportunity to give you more of what we talked about. It's just too interesting to keep to myself. I wanted to go back to Phil's album, Best of Intentions, to ask him to tell me about the song Lion.
Well, Lion really became my signature song in the sense that my greatest passion in life is that people will know what they're worth. There's nothing more important to me, and nothing has been more revolutionary in my life than fully realizing my value just as a human being, as somebody who exists. It's touched every part of my life. So I knew that at some point I wanted to encapsulate that message in, you know, this 3.5-minute musical package. And you only get so many words a song. So you got to figure out how you're going to encompass this massive message into this little musical package. And it was written for my Best of Intentions album, which came out in 2006. It was my fourth album. And Best of Intentions was written. It was done. And then I sat with the songs for a year so that I could really learn from them. And then when it came time to record them, things had changed a lot in my life. And I also wrote three new songs. And Lion was one of those three new songs. And it came from a friend of mine named Kyle, looked at me one night, and he said, "Hey, write a song about me." And I looked at him and I thought, "Okay, I've got something to say to you." And so I sat down with it, and I was working at Starbucks at the time, as all good musicians must at one point in their life. And I wrote the lyrics in between breaks, or during breaks, you know, in between shifts, and sat with it for about 2 weeks. And a couple weeks later, it was done. And I realized that I was so fortunate as a writer to finally be able to say the most important thing I wanted to say at that point. And that's where Lion came from. It is probably the clearest expression I've ever made of the fact that I want people to know what they're worth.
So you see, this is home. This is where I decide. This is why it's strange to have you seek for what I hide. I never built a door in my wall. I didn't alter the plans. But you didn't have to climb to put your hand inside my hand. Everyone else does. Everyone else does. Did you hear what you said when you said that you think that you're not worth very much? 'Cause it sounded to me like you were just lying. I know you could make a new sun for your sky and set it on fire with your touch. So it sounded to me like you were just lying. Claim the ground that waits just out of sight. You guide me here with simple words that help me sleep at night. And given all this space and time to see somehow where to go, why aren't you rushing me through and pulling me too close? Everyone else does. Said when you said that you think that you're not worth very much, 'cause it sounded to me like you were just lying. I know you could make a new sun for your sky and set it on fire with your touch. So it sounded to me like you were just lying, lying to your. You said when you said that you think that you're not worth very much, 'cause it sounded to me like you were just lying. I know you could make a new sun for your sky and set it on fire with your touch. So it sounded to me like you were just lying. Yeah, it sounded to me like you were just lying. Is that how it sounded to you? Were you lying? And how did it sound to you? Were you lying?
Your album's been out a year. What have you learned from the whole process, and will it affect how you approach your next album?
Well, I think it's a cliche, but things are cliches for a reason. Believe in your product. I mean, believe in what you've created. I've always been confident in my work, but I was very satisfied with Casualties when it was done, and I really took that confidence into how I presented it to people and the joy that I have in performing the songs. I mean, it changed my live show. It changed everything I do as an artist, and so I think that really is something I took away from it, was to just carry through that confidence, and people will respond to that. And I was able to have that confidence because I made a record that I first of all believed in, and second of all, that I genuinely like. And I've liked all my records. But there is something new and something exciting for me about performing these songs on Casualties and sharing them with people. I knew that when I finished Casualties that the next record was going to be different in terms of how I came to write it. And my writing style sort of resets, well, not my style, it's more my process, sort of resets itself every 2 to 3 albums. And for that, I'm as much along for the ride as anybody else would be. So the writing for my next album is coming along slowly and surely, and I feel like all my reference points as a writer are now different. So I need to go discover how I write a song again. And I really like that my artistic soul changes the game on me regularly, because it gives me a place to grow and it gives me a place to figure out, okay, how I expressed myself 5 years ago is not how I can express myself now. I need to figure this out for now. So that's something that I think is going to change the style and the way that the songs come together on the next record.
Is there an overall message to your music?
Absolutely. I think the most important thing to me in life that I try to put in my music is that people would know what they're worth. That is my driving life passion.
You've been working as an artist in both California and now New York City. How do you compare the music scenes, and in particular the GLBT music scenes of the two?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's important to note that I was in Sacramento, California. Yeah. I think when people think of California, they think of Los Angeles or San Francisco. Sacramento is the capital city, obviously. No, I don't know the governor. Just want to put that out there right now. But it has a great music scene of its own, but it's not the right place for my kind of music, for like piano-based acoustic music. It's more of like a local rock town. So working out there was fantastic for me because I use the internet so much to share my music. I'm always on Facebook and Twitter and using social media to share my work and connect with people. When I moved to New York, I live in Manhattan, and it's like steroids for my career. You know, location is everything, and living in an industry town has a value that you just really can't beat. So just the physical act of moving here and being able to build daily relationships with people that are co-creators, people that share the same vision, people that work on the business side that actually have the power to do something significant with my work in terms of, you know, a record label or a distributor or a booking agent, things like that, that have become available to me by living in Manhattan. So that's been a big change. Also, the people in Manhattan, they're great, because if they don't want to work with you, they'll just say no. And it's very efficient. It's the way that I like to work. In California, it's a little more difficult because I think people are less inclined to say no outright. They'll just say, oh, I'm really busy this week, let's meet next week, and then drag you on, you know, for 3 months until you get the clue, or you just don't get the clue and you keep dragging on. So I like the way business runs out in New York a lot. And as far as LGBT music scene here, it's great because there's so many openly gay artists. There's a lot of talent. There's a lot of opportunity to perform with each other and contribute to each other's careers. And that's really something that I try to always do in my attitude is, yeah, I mean, we're all competing for the attention of the same fan base, but I don't really care about that when it comes down to the opportunity to work with somebody or support them or share their work or whatnot. I'm very, you know, supportive in that way. So I like having access to fellow artists that I can both learn from and give support back to.
You've already touched a moment on this. You're very active on Facebook. How would you rate it as an internet tool for an artist, and what is the most useful tool?
Oh, it's right up there in number one. I think at this point the three most crucial pieces of digital real estate for an independent musician are, first, your official website, second, Facebook, and third, Twitter. And not, I mean those in a ranking, I mean that those three are the most important things. Facebook is not about numbers. I think you have to be careful, but the value of Facebook is that it's where you really build relationships. And, you know, I talk all the time about people being my favorite thing in life, but they really are. And so I love talking to my friends, my fans, and people know that if they chat me on Facebook and I'm available, I will talk with them and get to know them and learn their story. So Facebook is really the place where artists have a chance to go from being an artist to being their artist and building that relationship. And I think a lot of musicians, because they're so concerned about paying the bills and making sure their next project is a success, they don't take the time to learn about their fans. They just get attention from their fans and don't give it back. So I really enjoy the relational aspect of Facebook. Twitter's about numbers. Twitter is great for a quick news blast or whatever. But I spend a lot of time on Facebook because it's relational.
You've been doing some promotion for other artists. What's that about?
Well, you know, I like to get the word out about other artists that I believe in or that I'm working with. Obviously, if we're working together, then I obviously talk about them. Austin Marola is a good friend of mine. Marola, M-A-R-O-L-L-A. He's a fellow gay singer-songwriter here in New York, and he's just such a sweetheart and does great work, and we've done a few concerts together, and so I like to talk about him.
Okay, let's interrupt Phil to let you hear a song by Austin Marola called My Journey.
I really don't know who I am, searching the right doors to walk into. I love to sing, to dance, and laugh and cry, looking for ways to get sky high. I haven't wasted much time in my life, took the long road to get it right. I've chosen north, the south, the east, and west, seeing which one I thought fit me best. And I know, I know, I know, yes, I know, I know, I know, that this is my journey to the top. No one can take me down from here if you just listen to the voice of my heart. This is the answer to my prayers. No one can let me down from here if you just see into the eyes of my soul. This is my journey. This is my journey. Here I am singing my song, took many years to talk it out. There's been ups and downs, lefts and rights, finding every moment to beat the fight. But now there's time to take and some time to give, but no matter what, I'm gonna live. And I know, I know, I know, yes, I know, I know, I know, that this is my journey to the top. No one can take me down from here. Of my heart, this is the answer to my prayer. No one can let me down from here. You can see it through the eyes of my soul. This is my journey. This is my journey. Yes, I know, I know, I know.
resolved to take his life away. He loved his family, but was too ashamed to say, this is who I am. Won't let you break me down. Not gonna be defined by what you wanna see. What will it take to make you understand? This is who I am. Ground, don't be afraid to say, this is who I am. Won't let you break me down.
Won't you break me down.
Not gonna be defined by what you wanna see. What will it take to make you understand?
After Austin Merola, I shared with you a song by another friend of Phil's, Scotty Gage, and the song This Is Who I Am came from Scotty's 2007 EP, Waterslide.
I like to talk about Scotty Gage just because he's such a sweetheart. He's become a good friend here in town. And so there's a lot of other artists that it's just in my nature to talk positively about the things that I'm listening to or the things that I care about. It just comes down to the fact that I love people. And so if you're a part of my life and you're a good part of my life, I'm going to share you with others in a positive light.
Another artist that Phil has worked with is Joe Settinari, and Phil helped with the promotion of Joe's debut album, Stay. It happens that I also interviewed Joe for another of my radio shows, and I asked him how he got hooked up with Phil.
Phil was sent to me by the record label that I'm repped by, LML Music.
Uh-huh.
And they said he was a good guy to work with, so turns out they were right.
Tell me about the new album.
My new album called Stay is an album that I'm really excited about. It's my debut CD. It's written content materials all about things that happen to us every day, emotions about love and losing love and being walked out on, all those types of good things. And then musically, we took a lot of the stuff that I wrote on the piano and we added some great musical elements like driving rock guitar on You Walked and some beautiful haunting cello that we threw into the song Walls Close. And just lots of different elements and different parts of the world of music.
When you perform, what song gets the most audience reaction?
Oh, the most audience reaction. Well, Stay gets, just a lot of smiles and loving smiles because it's a song about love and it's a beautiful song. And when the cello's added into it, people just melt, and as do I. And I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back because the cello wasn't even my idea.
Why did you make Stay the title track?
I felt it most represented, for a couple of reasons. One, it most represented the songs that were, on the CD. I tend to write a lot about different aspects of love, and this one definitely has that. I also felt it was one of the strongest songs. Every time I listened to it, I enjoyed listening to it, and lots of people who had listened to it loved it, and I thought it was a great name for the CD, and the song was just, I thought, a really good, strong song.
your eyes a smile. Only known you for a little while. I hold your hands as we start to sway. Please don't ever go away. Stay with me. Stay with me. Dance with me and I'll hold you tight. Shine. Can't believe that you are mine. You had my heart with that one first kiss. That's when I made my wish. Stay.
Tell me about the song You Walked.
You Walked is a, it goes, you walked out the door and broke my heart. And I wrote that, and then I had some additional musical help from my friend Ziggy Sigmund, who's the lead guitarist for A Conaline Crush. And he took my piano playing, and he threw on some major rock drive to it, and it turned into just a whiz bang of a song. It's turned into one of my favorites.
I think the album needed that.
I do too. Yeah. I didn't write that song specifically because I said, oh, we need a fast up-tempo song or something like that, but it just fell into place. That's so much about this album when I was creating it and recording it. It's just things just all fell into place. It's kind of why I decided to make a run for it and do it.
And here's the song, You Walk.
Gonna do. Last week I bought a wedding ring, but tonight I hear the fat lady sing. 'Cause you walked out the door and broke my heart. You walked out the door and broke my heart.
what's it gonna be? Well, you walked out the door and broke my heart.
Is there an overall message to your music?
Is there an overall message to my music? Yeah, I think so. And maybe it's me putting my, whatever the word is, imposing my beliefs about my music onto the music. But, you know, it's that we all go through this kind of stuff. You know, we all fall in love. We fall out of love. We make mistakes. We get excited by love, and it's just the messages that we all have this within us, and it's a wonderful thing to experience it and to live it and to never stop doing that.
Again, that was Joe Settinari, and by the way, he's a cutie, so you can check out his site at joesettinari.com, and I'll spell his last name for you. Settinari. Okay, back to my interview with Phil Putnam. From your album from 2004, All the Courage Required, please talk about the song 91.
91 was fun. It was written in my head driving home from my college graduation. And there's about 3 hours between my hometown in Sacramento and the town where my university is. And so I was driving home from graduation on my own, and I had just released my second album, which is Long Story Short. So I was not thinking about writing another record. And I just was getting pelted with these lyrics in my head. But as I was driving home, I was obviously thinking about change and thinking about the next step in life. When I think about change and the next step, I think about relationships. I think about how people have changed, about, you know, I think about community and how that's changing, stuff like that. That's where my mind tends to focus. And this song just kept coming into my head, and I was listening to a lot of Dashboard Confessional at that time, and he's very much about, like, teen angst, you know, and so even though I was driving home from college graduation, I started thinking about a high school graduation. And I was definitely, I had my challenges socially in high school, and so I was thinking about just kind of outgrowing the outcast mentality. And 91 is really about that sort of that kind of sweaty summer urgency where you feel like, you know, you're a kid, and if you don't do it now, you're never going to get the chance. And you just, you've got those 91 days of summer to do what you want to do before you go on to the next thing, before you go to your first adult job, or before you go to college, or before you move to a different city. It's just that gotta do it now mentality paired with just moving on from that high school clique bullcrap.
Thank you. 91 days we've been given to do all the things that I'm told should have happened in school. It's night number one and the water is warm and begging to be used. Are you coming with me to the dam after dark? We're meeting the group, then we're following Mark to their house of a friend of a friend we knew back in the 7th grade. You don't have to worry, 'cause no one will notice if your hair's out of place or your t-shirt's a mess. We're all gonna swim and we're all gonna talk. Do you know what the plan is? Science or English, private or state? Or sitting at home with your hand on the phone and your heart inside your head? 'Cause I just talked to Matthew and we're all the same here, desperately hoping that the world will notice. Well, the energy's high and we're waving goodbye to the privilege of the young. But before this is over, before this is gone, there are just a few chances that I gotta take. She's older, they're smiling, over, they're laughing. She's older, they're looking kind. And what do we lose if we fall asleep tonight? We're holding the sun, but he's rising with a fight. And what do we lose if we fall asleep tonight? We're holding the sun. Yeah, we're holding the sun. And you don't have to worry, it won't last forever. There's 91 days and there's one almost gone. September will come and we'll all be adults then. We'll all be apart, but we won't be forgetting the 91 days when we did all the things that we should have done long before. We're watching the sky and the sun that is setting, writing a song so we won't be forgetting the 91 days when we did all the things that we should have done long.
What was the first lyrically gay song you recorded, and what did it take to get to the point that you wanted to do that?
Well, first of all, my view on gay music, so to speak, is, you know, whether or not it explicitly uses a gay-identified pronoun or talks specifically about gay topics and identifies them outright in the lyric, because I am a gay individual, and all my music comes out of my life, and one way or another, it, you know, represents a piece of me. But also, I don't write every song about quote-unquote gay things. I think it's important to write about the entire perspective of a life. But I'm trying to think what the first, one of the first, I guess it would be Paris. I mean, it's not the very first one I wrote, but it comes the earliest in the order of things in Casualties. In Casualties was the first time I started using specific pronouns. Because, you know, I had three albums out when I finally realized that I was gay, and my fourth one was already in process, and it was already being, it was almost already done being recorded. So I did go back and change a few things, but kept most of the record the same. So this is, Casualties is the first fully original record that I've written since I officially came out and realized that I was gay and went through that whole transition in my life. So Paris would have been the earliest one. And, you know, once I realized I was gay, for me, there was no choice in the matter. If I was going to write a love song, if I was going to, use a pronoun, it was going to be a him rather than a her, because it's really important for me to be honest, but it's also really important for me to have one integrated life. I'm not much for being haunted, and I didn't want to have to worry about what would happen if, you know, if and when my fans found out that I'm gay. You know, I'm not the gay in here, no Clay Aiken stuff here. I just wanted to be out and have one life. So when, you know, when it came time to write Paris, and there's a very strong romantic element to that song, it just was a no-brainer for me that I would be identifying this person I'm looking for as a man rather than a woman.
Talk about the song Paris.
I know I'm biased, but I love it. I can't believe it's mine. It was one of the earliest ones that I wrote for Casualties, and I remember writing the chord progression, the verse chord progression, and just was so happy with it. I was so excited that it came out of me. And I thought there was going to be a chorus, and eventually I let that go. But as long as I can remember, before I can recall when it started, I've wanted to go to Europe. And sort of fascinated by the whole Bohemian, you know, Montmartre sort of a thing, the Moulin Rouge type thing. Not the lasciviousness of it, but the idea of just being there to create, being there to write. And so I got this idea that before I was 30, I wanted to go and spend 6 weeks in a flat in the left bank of the Seine and just write, you know, and just have books and friends and, you know, a piano and just be there long enough that it doesn't feel like a vacation, and really just have nothing to do but create and be influenced by the environment and grow as an artist. So I did make it to Paris shortly after my 30th birthday, but when I wrote this, I pretty much knew this would be a dream rather than a reality. And so I wrote it as such. I wrote what my ideal, you know, bohemian experience in Paris would be like. And then I took this song to my producer, Steve Wallace, and he wrote just this stunning string horn and wind arrangement that I just melt over still every time I hear it. I really feel almost like it's more his song than mine. I mean, I wrote everything, but he really made the song what it became, and I'm just so pleased with it.
And I also agree that the song is gorgeous. Here is Paris.
There's a flat in Paris for me, with windows that welcome the light, piano in wait for my hand, sofa in wait for my rest. There's a flat in Paris for me, where the floors will creak when I stare. Walls will give me their breath soul, and bring
a smile in t-shirt and jeans. Love of a long summer night. A kiss on the balcony. There's a man in Paris.
I can picture a very ethereal video for it.
Yeah, you know, and it's very much, I had Clair de Lune in my head by Debussy. I had some later impressionist work, painting work, not so much the prime time of Monet, but a little bit later and going into even the pointillism era. But I had such a strong visual in my head, and it's very much, you know, the watercolor soft lighting thing, because again it was a fantasy, and it was one of the only songs I've ever done that was not about like full-on reality, something I've lived through. And I put it on Casualties because the rest of the record lyrically is somewhat intense, and it's really about the past and harvesting the past and getting the wisdom out of it and then moving on. So I wanted something that would be this lush oasis for the listener that could be sort of this resting point, this breath of fresh air in the middle of this record that would allow them to take a break from the intensity and just have this respite before we went on and finished the project.
I want to treat you next with the music of an artist I've been following for about 10 years, and with a short interview with him. I eagerly awaited the release of his latest CD last year called The Cottage Sessions. He's Scott Friedman, and I first asked about the name of the CD.
Why did you give the CD that name?
The Cottage Sessions, this is the first album that I recorded myself. So I did my own production on recording, on equipment, and where I live, it very much resembles kind of this old Spanish mission, and kind of, you know, I joke around with my friends, we call it The Cottage. So I figured that would be a very apt title for this kind of bare-bones indie album.
There's two I particularly like. There's a number of them I like. But I want to hear about the song Over You.
Over You. My little anger song. For me, it's anger. Over You is about a relationship that ended for me about 2 years ago. And it was probably the hardest relationship that ended for me because it was the only relationship that ended before I was ready for it to. Other times I kind of knew it was coming or possibly even initiated it, but that relationship kind of was a complete blindside. And as I finally got over it, I realized that the person who had ended the relationship seemed to be reaching back and sending mixed messages that I could only construe as this kind of doubt. Did I do the wrong thing? And, you know, at the time I was processing a lot of emotions, but I was reading this book who made a great point that when someone ends a relationship, they have the responsibility of having to think they made the right decision, not just for one person, but for two people. And that kind of launched the idea of the song is, now that you got what you wanted, was it really what you wanted? And kind of me moving on, and regardless what their own processing is, I had decided to move on and leave that whole pain behind. So that's why I was over the person, over the relationship. Despite whatever they might be still going through, I decided for myself to move on.
You were a scared little boy pretending to be a man. Desperate for love, and it was catch me if you can.
afraid of your own skin, so you tried to wear mine. But I was always shoving you out, trying to convince you yours was fine. I was worth so much more than you gave. But how do you rescue someone who just wants to be saved? Now that you got what you wanted, is it really what you wanted? 'Cause you gotta live with that decision that you made. Love might not last forever, but it sure can last a lifetime and be the one beautiful thing that doesn't fade. And it's taken some time, but I'm glad to say it's true. I'm finally getting over you. Things were never smooth, yeah, mostly they were rough. 'Cause no matter what I did, it was never good enough. We were worth so much more than you gave. Well, now and then there's a love that's not worth a sale. Now that you got what you wanted, is it really what you wanted? 'Cause you gotta live with that decision that you made. Well, nothing will last forever, but it sure can last a lifetime and be the one beautiful thing that doesn't fade. And it's taken some time, but I'm glad to say it's true. I'm finally getting over you. So sick of all your games when the fighting's all the same. Tell me, what's the point instead? There's nothing you can do when the block is all turned blue. We were worth so much more than you gave. And now I'm glad I have a chance to say, now that you got what you wanted, it's not really what you wanted, but you gotta live with that decision that you made. Love might not last forever, but it sure can last a lifetime. Be the one beautiful thing that doesn't fade. Be the one beautiful thing that doesn't fade. Be the one beautiful thing that doesn't fade. And it's taking some time, but I'm glad to say it's true. I finally got it over you.
Tell me about the song Home.
Home. That was written actually at the time I was touring down in Australia. And of course, you know, this feeling of being so far away, it was very exciting and at the same time very scary for me. So I was in a relationship at the time with someone who was back in the U.S. and, you know, this kind of play in between calls and long distance and time changes. And this idea of kind of never losing home for me really propelled the idea of that song. So despite how far you are, it's not necessarily the physical place, but actually just that kind of internal place you either view as sanctuary or safety, depending on the situation, regardless of where you may be.
If I was to find out that you never told me you died or up to the well, would I then say, hey, well, no one ever really meant him, I say, yeah, yeah. Ooh. Ooh. If I was to forget that, said it'd take a miracle to let yourself love, would I then start listening to the damning voices up inside of my head? I'm not gonna be the one who's kicking down a broken wall. I'm not gonna be the one left crying, no.
I was searching, finding, losing, find again in love and hope. Then I make my way back. Oh, make my way. If I was to turn my back to you, the times I told myself that I never looked me straight in the eye, maybe I could go on with life. Hold my head up, be the first smile that you see in a room. Ooh. Ooh. Well, I'm not gonna be the one who's kicking down a broken wall. I'm not gonna be the one left crying, no. I was searching, finding, losing, finding, gaining love and hope. Gonna make my way back. Oh, 'cause home to you's not home to me. Yeah, home to you's not home to me. Yeah. If I was to find out that you never told me a tatter of truth, oh. Well, I'm not gonna be the one who's kicking down a broken wall. I'm not gonna be the one left crying, no. I'll search and find and lose and find again in love and hold. Gonna make my way, make my way, make my way back. Oh, make my way.
Do you think the whole CD sets a mood?
It does for me. you know, this album for me is so many different emotions. I think probably out of my material, which usually is very personal, I'd say this is the most personal. And I think the mood is just kind of, I think it's intimate. I think it's raw. I think it's earnest. And I think it can be painful at times, but hopefully comforting that I felt comfortable and I guess vulnerable enough to kind of put this out there, mostly because that's the kind of music that helped me through a lot of difficult times in my life. When I was a teenager, you know, being closeted and kind of dealing with some things, the music that really helped me the most was music I felt was genuine and that kind of I could see my struggle in. So if I can do that for someone else, that would be the greatest gift for me.
I want to slip in a cover song Scott did live about 10 years ago about a gay teenager who committed suicide. Patty Griffin wrote the song called Tony. I kind of surprised Scott that I had it, as you will hear.
I keep stuff in a database. Let's see, I've got a live recording by you doing Tony.
Oh, really?
In Boston.
Huh, how do you have that?
I got it.
I don't even have that. How in the world did you get that, do you know?
I don't remember.
That's too funny.
Does anyone remember Tony? He was a quiet boy, little overweight, dressed like a girl. When I wasn't too busy feeling lonely, I'd stare over his shoulder at a map of the world. He always finished all his homework. Raise his hand in homeroom before the morning attendance and the pledge of allegiance to the gloom. Hey Tony, what's so good about dying? I think I might do a little dying today. Looked in the mirror and saw that little faggot staring back at him. Pulled out a gun and blew himself away. hated every day of high school. It's funny, I guess you did too. It's funny how I never knew. There I was sitting right behind you. They wrote it in a local rag. Death comes through the local fag. I guess you finally stop believing that any hope would ever find you. I knew that story, I was sitting right behind you. Hey Tony, what's so good about dying? I think I'm about too little, dying a day. Looked in the mirror and saw that little faggot staring back at him. Pulled out a gun and blew himself away.
Again, that was an unreleased track by Scott called Tony, recorded in 2000. Scott's website is at www.scottfriedman.com. And his spelling's a little different. It's SKOTTFREEDMAN. This is J.D. Doyle, and again, I want to thank Phil Putnam, Joe Settinari, and Scott Friedman for the interviews, and you for joining me on Queer Music Heritage. I want to close this segment with a song I really love from Scott's 2006 album, Judge a Book, which was a very cool CD he did of cover songs. It included some nice duets with Jill Sabio, Edie Carey, and a longtime favorite of mine, Mark Weigel. Scott and Mark did a cover version of the Magnetic Field song, Papa Was a Rodeo, only they did it the way it should have been done.
Tell me about your recording of Papa Was a Rodeo.
Ooh, taking me back. All right, Papa Was a Rodeo, that was a song that I heard, someone put it on a mixtape for me, and at first I thought, what in the world is this? And as I listened to it more, I thought, this is great. It's kind of this, you know, quirky song about the rodeo, and, you know, the other character's name the guy is singing to is called Mike. And so I thought, oh, clearly this is like this kind of cool gay rodeo song. And at the end of the version, this girl started singing. And so it just, it was like a record scratch in my ears. And I thought, why is there a girl singing here? And I guess the irony and, you know, the magnetic field, kind of what they do is, the irony was Mike was actually a girl or something. But when I heard that song, I thought, no, that's not right. Even though, you know, Stephen Merritt wrote it, I thought, I'm gonna write this one. So I decided, who's going to be my male voice? Who would kind of fit this theme of, you know, the rodeo and this kind of guy's guy? And, you know, I know Mark Weigel's music for years. He's just so amazing. And we were playing San Francisco Pride together. And backstage, I said, you know what? I said, I have this idea. And I pitched it to him. And he was so excited. He, you know, passed it by his friend, Armistead Malpin, who was thrilled because he always thought it should be a male voice, too. So I sent the tapes to Mark. He recorded it up in San Fran, and then we put it out. And we both were just so excited. I guess the reception it got a lot of radio play. People still just kind of like the kind of retake on that song because it just sounds more right to me.
Thank you. glistening eyebrows. You've made it pretty clear what you like. It's only fair to tell you now that I leave early in the morning, and I won't be back till next year. You got that kiss me bug for me, but maybe you should plug it with a bill. Rock and roll band. I could play guitar and a rope steer before I learned to stand. Home was anywhere with a diesel gas. Love was the trucker's hand. Never stuck around long enough for one night stand. Before you kiss me, you should know.
Off the mirror ball, it looks like a thousand swirling eyes. They make me think I shouldn't be here at all. You know, every minute someone dies. What are we doing in this dive bar? How can you live in a place like this? Why don't you just get into my car? I'll take you away.
I'll take that kiss now. But Papa was a rodeo, Mama was a rock and roll band. I could play guitar and a rope steer before I learned to stand. Home was anywhere with a diesel gas. Love was the trucker's hand. Never stuck around long enough for one night stand. Before you kiss me, you should know Papa was a rodeo.
Know Papa was a rodeo.